And that's the million-dollar question. And that's what a counselor has to wrestle with every 2 weeks when that agenda comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Because the decisions you make have grave consequences on all of those groups of people.
For Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime on the internet, WFPR.FM, and in the Franklin Mass FM radio dial. Yeah, the dial or the push buttons you can preset to 102.9. That's the one. We're here in our glorious studio again today with Scott Mason. Scott, thanks for stopping by.
Anytime, Steve. Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. We always have good conversations, and I know we'll have a conversation about trains, but right now there's kind of this election thing that I think we might want to talk about in the meantime.
Yeah, I mean, it's the elephant in the room, right? It's such an important year for Franklin that, I think it's a good idea that we have this discussion, because you're right. The trains we can talk about anytime, and I'm certainly excited to do that when the right time is here.
Right. They're on schedule. They will meet the schedule. So that's okay.
Yep.
And for people who may not recall, who's this Scott? You were a former town councilor.
Yeah, I was. I served 3 terms in the town council, beginning in 2005, and from 2009 to 2011, I was the chairman of the town council. So I've got a little bit of experience sitting behind that desk. I feel like I've got some insight into how business is transacted back there, but also, you know, I've been involved in these elections for many years as both a candidate and a fly on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I feel like the dynamics of this particular election are more critical, of more interest to more people. And I think it's worthy of a conversation between us today.
Sure. I'm open to that. As you're aware, I've been reporting since 2006, 2007. So, yeah, I remember your days. I was on the other side, usually with a Milford Daily News reporter who don't exist anymore.
Well, it's interesting that you survived in a major daily newspaper like the Milford Daily News is now gone by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations on enduring and your longevity.
Yeah, and learning a bunch of things through observation along the way.
I'm sure it's been a learning experience for you. It was certainly a learning experience for me when I got on the council. I knew I wanted to serve. I understood the volunteer nature of being a town councilor. And I'm worried, I'm concerned, Steve, that a little bit of that has gotten lost over the years.
Yeah. So let's go and set some of the process. I'm process oriented. You certainly have followed the process. When you're a new counselor and you have either an idea or some key issue, you still require 9 votes on a particular topic in order to, well, technically 6 maybe, or 5, depending upon what's going on. Mm-hmm. But there are 9 voices there that all get 1 vote. So what's it like on that first year for a counselor?
I think there's a learning curve. And I think regardless of how much you think you know between the time you decide to run for town counselor and the time you get elected onto that town council, I think there's a little bit of an ice bucket challenge, if you will, in terms of getting through that learning curve. For me, it was about 18 months before I started feeling comfortable asking questions, knowing the right questions to ask, knowing when to shut up. So that's the initial process, just getting used to working in a group of 9. The common misconception, because I think we tend to look at town council like we do other types of political positions, is that you're not one person. You're 1 of 9 people.
Right.
And you've got to learn to function in that group of 9. If you can't build consensus for whatever your agenda is, then it's not going to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And consensus can mean 5. Sometimes it can mean 6. So it's a process of work, cultivating relationships, understanding issues, mm-hmm. and being able to communicate them to the others on the council.
Right. Now, I recall certainly the package comes out. I don't think the council gets kind of a preview other than maybe the chair working with town administration in order to determine the agenda. Mm-hmm. But then effectively, in my mind, you spend most of the weekend at least reviewing the agenda and the materials, and in some cases, that can be boatloads.
Yeah. The agenda packet has gotten substantially bigger over mm-hmm. the years. If you remember, town council meetings, if they ran past an hour, it was because it was budget season.
Right.
But generally speaking, they didn't go longer than that. Now, we've got these marathon council meetings that go to 11 o'clock at night.
3, 4, 5.
Yeah. It's crazy how much business that they deal with. So it is a daunting amount of work that comes in that packet every 2 weeks. But that is the price you pay for being on the town council. You're responsible for reading it thoroughly, understanding it, asking questions if mm-hmm. need be, and having discussions, not in a quorum situation, but with the chairman, with other counselors, with the town administrator, to make sure that you understand what it is that you're going to be discussing and potentially voting on in the next meeting.
Right. Yeah, and that quorum situation certainly brings to mind open meeting laws. So mm-hmm. that's one of the things, as I understand, and they'll certainly get from what I understand. Also, generally at the start of a new term, new counselors, at least previously, maybe one or two or three were new, so they kind of glossed over some of the things to the extent that the potential for more than three this time around. The town administration, I believe, is preparing kind of the full bore of the ethics piece, the open meeting law piece, because even for some who may be coming back, it was a few years ago. More than a few years ago in some cases. Mm-hmm. And all of those are important things that, yes, as a volunteer, we're not paid for it. And yes, I'm a volunteer. I'm not paid for what I do. But those are things that, as a volunteer, on behalf of we, the people, you're going to be conducting our business. The three major items, which hiring and monitoring a town administrator, mm-hmm. approving the budget, guiding the priorities around the budget, and third, serving as sometimes judge and jury on ABCC alcohol liquor licenses, which sure. can get really dicey when sure. some of those are, you know, touchy situations.
There is some very important oversight. Those three points are certainly among them. A lot of what the council does, though, is more mundane. It's custodial in nature. It has to be done. It's their annual transactions. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes candidates don't realize that that's the majority of what you're going to be working
right.
on. The stuff that we do every day.
Sure.
To keep the town running.
Yeah.
They have these hot issues. Sometimes candidates are singular issue based. And once that falls or rises,
gets resolved in some way.
Yeah, you know, then all of a sudden they have no purpose. Hmm. Or, you know, in this instance where they can't reconcile to the idea that they're not just one and they can't unilaterally make change, there's a reality that sets in. And sometimes, and I've seen it, you know, they spend the balance of their term, you know, kind of wishing that they'd done something else. you know, planning board's fun, I heard. I think, you know, obviously that packet of business is hugely important in digesting it and understanding it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the stuff in there is, that's where the learning curve comes in. You can read that stuff. If you're new, right. you can read that stuff till the cows come home and be like, what is this?
What does this mean?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
And sometimes just the procedural the Roberts rules that we follow. Right.
The motions, seconds, discussion, and then vote, and maybe an amendment or two, or friendly amendment, or maybe amend that. It can get complicated.
Yeah. So you know, we're in a situation where we could have a total turnover of the council.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a first, but it would also, you know, tee up this greater issue of how do you then get through a learning curve that you really need maybe 18 months to sort through when all of a sudden everybody is brand new.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a very interesting situation come November 5th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the learning curve, understanding the process, I think is key. Certainly, I'm process oriented to begin with, but that also has served my role in terms of capturing the data from the meetings, doing the recordings, following up. And for those should be aware, I condensed the school committee meeting with a chalkboard chat. I condensed the town council meeting with a town council quarterbacking.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if it's a 3-4 hour session, Tom Mercer and I condense it to about 30 minutes. Okay, what just happened? And what does it mean for us as residents and voters? Because, yeah, to your point, some of those documentations, and yes, I've read most of those as well, they can be very obtuse or they can be succinct and to the point. And how do you got to go through it in order to figure that out?
Sure, you do. And I think that's probably the hardest thing to come to grips with.
Mm-hmm.
What are the everyday chores that on the council? What are the hot points? What are the big issues? And I think we've seen this over the years. You've got, like I said, someone running who's singularly focused, and they can't get their agenda through. And then all of a sudden, they realize, well, all right, the reality of this is that all of these issues that I thought I was against, as I'm learning, I'm understanding them better, and I'm not really against them anymore. And I think, and this is the other dynamic that happens, now all of a sudden, all the people who sit out here and are against, you know, things like overrides, things like that, now look at you as the enemy.
Right.
When I first ran for town council, I lived in a neighborhood that I had grown up in. My grandfather had built most of the houses in that neighborhood, and a lot of the original owners were still there.
Yep.
And it took me several days to get my 100 signatures, because every door that I knocked on, they invited me in, they wanted to feed me, they wanted to talk to me. You know, it was kind of a familial thing.
Right.
The second term, it took me about a day and a half to get through the neighborhood. And I realized that, some of these people didn't really want to talk to me for that long.
Mm-hmm.
My third term, I had to run through the neighborhood to keep from being tarred and feathered. Because at that point, I had just alienated everybody. And part of it was my own education as to how the council works and what the reality is of what you can accomplish.
Yeah.
We've heard a lot of talk about from the candidates about audits, right? There's got to be fiscal abuse, right? We're not spending money properly. There's wasted money. We've got to find out where it is. I don't know whether it's a campaign strategy. We're going to get to the bottom of this. If I'm elected, we're going to get to the bottom of this. The bottom line is we've already gotten to the bottom of it. We get to the bottom of it every single year.
Right.
Cities and towns have to pass a balanced budget every year. We cannot deficit spend.
So on that term, balanced budget means the revenues coming in, however and wherever they are, must balance exactly to the penny the expenses that are foreseen for that budget in order to balance. Slightly differently is the enterprise funds, which are fee-based for water, sewer, trash, and stormwater. That's kind of separate. But the operational budget, must balance.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't necessarily account for how that money is spent within a balanced budget, but that's where the audits come in.
And that's where the process, at least through FinCom and the budget hearings, mm-hmm. capital separately,
yep.
and then town council in their budget hearings, they get the opportunity of looking at line by line in glorious detail, and it's hundreds of pages.
It's hundreds of pages.
Because it is line by line for all those details
yep.
from every department. And realistically, there's six or so that account for like the 80-20 rule. Because respectfully, a lot of the departments are required, Board of Health, Board of Assessors, but their budget relative to the whole is de minimis.
All this is rolled up, right, to the town council. And, you know, FinCom does a great job of vetting that budget before it ever gets to the town council level.
Right.
Partly because, like you said, it's a billion pages long,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, reading it is the cure for insomnia. And if you're not very careful, because it is line item by line item,
mm-hmm.
you can miss something.
Sure.
You know, several years ago, we had frozen town employee raises. And it was a very difficult decision to make because all of our town employees work very hard and they all deserve whatever they can get.
Sure.
And it was difficult and painful to say we don't have the money to give raises. And one of the departments, despite having a conversation with the person responsible, decided they were going to try to hide raises, you know, within their department budget. And we found it.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a big problem.
Sure.
No one's getting away with anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this idea that we're wasting money on whatever it is that you don't like, I think we're a lean, mean organization. Franklin has always been considered a more bang for the buck community.
Mm-hmm.
We're very well organized, we're very well run, and we're very well managed. Jeff Nutting was a town administrator when I was on the council, and he was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about getting value for the dollar.
Right.
He knew how to do that.
Right.
It's a little bit of a different situation now. Franklin is bigger. The annual budget is larger. Jamie Helen has his work cut out for him, but he does it. I don't think he's particularly popular in some cases because of the decisions he has to make. But, you know, that comes with the job.
Sure.
But, you know, to suggest that Franklin as a town government is wasting money, I think is a fallacy. And this idea that this term has come up, forensic audit, which is a term used in criminal investigations,
mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't even apply here.
Well, it needs to be targeted, as I understand it. We did have one, maybe two in my time reporting, but those were targeted
mm-hmm.
for a specific set of circumstances. So you're looking for the needle in the haystack.
Yeah.
But you're looking for that, as opposed to what I think they're meaning when they say that. Just go looking and go find something. And you can't do that.
No, it doesn't work like
doesn't
that.
Do that. And to the point that in this past year, so I think it was in May 2025 when the audit as part of the annual review comes up. The lead auditor also made it everybody aware at the council hearing that, oh, by the way, this was also a new audit team, so they had not done anything with Franklin before, came in, and oh, by the way, the results were still pristine. No management letter, which for those who, if you haven't heard, a management letter says, oh, by the way, we found this and you need to fix that. Franklin has, for a number of years, not had a management letter.
Yeah.
That's a significant accomplishment.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, the offshoot of that is that we annually have the highest bond ratings, the highest credit ratings.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were doing something wrong, it would reflect in that. These folks who suggest that this is the route we need to go down. First of all, I don't think understand what it would cost to do a full town audit.
We couldn't afford it.
You could pass 5 overrides, for what it would cost. But you're going to come back with the same results.
Mm-hmm.
Is there some form of waste somewhere? Probably. But if it exists, it's probably on such a minute level that I don't want to use the term inconsequential.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But purging it out of the spending isn't going to change anything.
No.
We're still going to be, 6 million, 3 million, whatever that override number is, short of the money that we need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because bottom line is I've been sitting, clearly we can go up 2.5% every year, and yay, we do. Mm-hmm. Some councilors don't agree that they're actually raising the taxes, but in fact, that is technically what they're doing, approving the 2.5%, which is legally what we can do.
Yep.
I'm not advocating we shouldn't do that.
No.
If you look back at the inflation, and you can just use, even the Social Security cost of living thing just came out, and it was 2.8% versus our 2.5, right? So we're already 0.3% behind and don't have a mechanism to catch it up.
Sure.
Right?
And that doesn't...
And do that over the last 10, 15 years, that adds up rapidly.
It does. And, this goes back, we've passed one override. We passed it in my first term or mm-hmm. second term, and then we failed to pass one in my last term. But Jeff Nutting was sounding this alarm
long ago,
20 years ago.
Yep, he knew it was coming.
And an offshoot of that, because we were struggling to pass overrides, was the 5-year master plan.
Yes,
and what we had hoped at the time, when we began talking about this, was that people would look at this and say, yes, this is the direction that we want to go in as a town,
mm-hmm.
and start to formulate what it was going to cost to get there, so
yeah.
that when we came back to the town and said we need this override, it wouldn't be so drastic.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't take the surprise out of it.
Sure, yeah. I recall that because after, to your point, to reinforce, 2007 was the success, 2008 failed, 2010 failed. And based on that, the town formed that long-range financial planning committee,
mm-hmm.
which crafted that first 5-year outlook, which is now incorporated in that 5-year fiscal forecast that the town administrator produces.
Yeah.
I think, respectfully, he undercuts it somewhat, especially post-COVID, saying it's getting harder to forecast, but that's the nature of the beast. You still need to know exactly what the department expenses are, and then even if it's just the 2.5, and then you've got your other considerations. You still need that, and those numbers are not pretty.
No.
But that's the way it is.
No, they're not pretty, and, we've every year we cut and we cut and we cut, and the... There is a percentage of people in town that subscribe to the ideology that we're burying money in blueberry jars out in the back behind the town hall,
mm.
and that's not true. But I understand it too, because for years we also played this game where, we had all this money from the lawsuit with the power plant,
right.
and we were borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, and we found the money.
Mm-hmm.
So once that gets ingrained in people's heads, if you found the money once, you'll find it again.
Yeah.
Well, you're really not going to make those cuts.
No.
But this year, Steve, we've seen a little bit of a phenomenon, right?
Mm-hmm.
The override didn't pass, and there was a lot of discussion about what was going to happen if the override didn't pass.
It was forecast that some things would happen.
And those things happened. And lo and behold, people threw up their hands and said, oh, my God.
Wait a minute.
You
Wait
can't
a minute.
Empty the trash at the athletic fields anymore? Well, yeah, we said.
Yeah.
Jamie Helen said this was going to happen. We were going to lose a nurse. And that's just, to me, that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's just round one.
Mm-hmm.
If we can't get a council that agrees to move forward in a positive way with this town, and by that I mean funding it appropriately, then the next round of cuts are going to hurt more people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a member of the Historical Commission.
Yep.
It's the perfect non-political place for me now.
History.
History.
Who needs it?
Right. Exactly. Well, and that's the point, right? Because we're low-hanging fruit on the town budget.
Right.
It's very easy to close up the museum. It's very easy to disband the commission.
Mm-hmm.
We're a luxury.
Right.
And it's not a lot of money, but it is some money.
Yeah. When you start trying to make those hard decisions and hard discussions, what do you do? Clearly, police, fire, schools, DPW, facilities, it's hard. I mean, you can make some minor things within there. Mm-hmm. Maybe not water the grass like he's not done. Maybe not, you know, you put in, but we've already put in all the LEDs, so you can't save any more money there.
Right.
We're already on solar, so you can't save any more money there. Then you get into the others, and thereby the next set is, library, senior center, historic museum, who knows what else is on the list.
The things that make us a great community, right? Yeah. Our school system is great. We want to maintain that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all of these ancillary things, the museum, the wonderful library we have, the programs that we have for our seniors.
Yeah.
They're next.
Yeah.
And there's this, I hear the talk, the denial. Well, no one's going to close the senior center. They'd never close the library. Well, I've got news for you. I was the chairman of the council. I take that back. In 2007, when we passed the override, mm-hmm. the library was on the chopping block.
Sure.
And we absolutely 100% would have closed the library if that override didn't pass.
Right.
So if the discussion comes up the next time around, look, if we don't do this, mm-hmm. then this is going to happen.
Yeah.
The citizens better.
And it was either 8 or 10 when the overrides failed mm-hmm. that the library budget was indeed cut, which we needed a waiver from the State Library Board.
Yeah.
And that took us years to get the funding because it's all a mathematical formula for the state requires.
Yeah, for the accreditation.
Took us years to get back to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody wanted to do that. We as a council didn't sit there and say, this we'll teach you a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
We want all of these things. A counselor needs to be concerned about everybody and every department.
Mm-hmm.
If you come in with an axe to grind and your axe is, well, I only care about the school system, or I only care about public safety, or I only care about making sure, an override never gets on a ballot, then you're not doing your job.
Mm-hmm.
The philosophy that I took into the council was I'm going to try to do the best I can for as many people as I can. And I didn't even look at it from a department standpoint. What's the best thing for the town?
Right. For the 35,000-36,000 of us, whatever it is, 26,000 registered voters, 4,300 students and associated family members, a growing senior population,
mm-hmm.
what's the best for us?
And that's the million-dollar question. And that's what a counselor has to wrestle with every 2 weeks when that agenda comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Because the decisions you make have grave consequences on all of those groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, that it's easy to say, well, we can't afford more taxes. Well, no one really wants to pay more taxes. I think, in general, that's a given.
That's a given. I would agree.
But at what point are you willing to pay more taxes? Well, to me, if it maintains the quality of our community, if it maintains the quality of our school system, if we're not cutting after school programs, if we're not sacrificing public safety, if we're able to enjoy the arts and our history and, mm-hmm. and things of that nature, I'm going to pay a little more for that.
Sure.
Because those things are important to me. But if you're looking at it from no other standpoint than, being able to live in your house, well, what does a lessened school system, worse public safety, do to your house values? they go down.
Right.
And I know, I mean, I'll be 63 in a month. I know what you're saying. He looks so young. And you're right. But I think senior citizens are, it's a struggle every day.
Yeah.
Franklin is not a cheap community to live in.
No.
How do I stay in my house? Councils have to be sensitive to that too.
Right. Right.
So I'm venting a lot.
Well, it's a complex topic.
It is a complex topic.
And there are many avenues we can go. We just covered a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not all of them.
Yeah. And the reason, you know, I think this conversation is important is because I hope, you know, we will have new counselors.
Mm-hmm.
How many, we don't know, but we will have some new, at least three new counselors.
Correct.
And I hope that they sit in those seats with an open mind,
mm-hmm.
That they understand that this is truly teamwork,
mm-hmm.
And also that all of the decisions you make are critical to the town,
mm.
Not just the ones that are important to you.
Right, for sure. And to paraphrase my council comment that I made last week, know who you're voting for. So that's to the voters specifically. And there's bunches of info that's out there now. So you should be able to find out something about most everybody. At least in my work, I've done 25 interviews. A couple people did not reply. That's their choice. So that can be a factor for you or not. That's your choice. Know who you're voting for. Know why you're voting for them, right? Because if they're not aligned with what you need to do or you want to do in terms of the direction, that's a consideration, right? If they're saying one thing and you want to do something else, give that a consideration, right? And then clearly talk to your neighbors, because the sad rule is, unfortunately, that 80% of the registered voters don't care, and don't care specifically enough to know that they actually have an honor and an obligation to cast a vote on or before November 4th for town council, school committee, town clerk, et cetera, et cetera. 80% of the people don't vote. So talk to your neighbors and your friends and say, hey, are you going to vote? If they are, great. Thank you. Make sure you get all the info. If you're not, find out why. Get them to maneuver to either an early voting opportunity or to the high school on the day of. We need that for all of us to make whatever, and then let the voters speak.
I mean, those are great points, Steve. And I think that, you know, you mentioned the 26,000. The fewer people that vote, the more the election becomes a popularity contest.
Mm-hmm.
The more people that vote, the less it is. You're getting now more informed people that are voting. And that's how we get the right people,
mm-hmm.
You know, behind those seats, behind that desk. And that's what we want. So, you know, we've talked about this many times. It's an incredibly frustrating point for me that, you know, somewhere between 12 and 20% of the registered voters vote in town elections. Your vote truly, truly matters in a town election. Town council directly affects how your tax money is spent. 75% of the people come out and vote for a president, but we're a blue state, folks. And, you know, if ever your vote probably didn't matter, it's in those circumstances. So I mean, my dad fought in World War II.
So did mine.
And, you know, so that people could have the right to go out and cast a vote. So please vote on election day.
Mm-hmm. Honor before November 4th.
Yep.
Early voting works. It certainly is more flexible. Unfortunately, even with the addition of the absentee ballots, early voting, vote by mail, we haven't ticked up the percent. All it's done is kind of shifted away from voting in person on the day. Mm-hmm. People are taking advantage of the convenience of it, which is all well and good, but we need more people to actually do the voting, period.
Well, and if it's a question of reluctance to leave your house, you've got the perfect vehicle now to still vote. But yet we're not, like you say, we're not seeing that uptick.
Right, right. Well, thank you for spending some time today, stopping by to share some views and perspectives on the critical town election, biennial election coming up November 4th. So thank you again, and thank you, listeners, for participating. If you have any questions or comments, Scott's info and mine is always on the show notes. And a quick reminder, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.